Okay, so we're continuing with the Ramban on page Pei Aleph in the Beit Hayayin edition, page Kuf Chaf Hei in the Chazon Yoel edition. So the Ran is now going to bring a few more examples where we see that sacrifices were very potent. Uvet Amidash Nami Alidei Korban Nivchar, the temple was also chosen only after they brought a sacrifice in the temple, as it says, Vayavogad David Beomer Uviyomer Lo, Alei Hakem Lashem Yizbech Begon Rav Naivusi. David is commanded, go set up an altar up in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount, and it says, "Va'even sham David mizbech Hashem ve'alolot u'shlamim ve'atzer Hashem la'aretz v'atzer magfam man Yisrael." There's a terrible plague. King David sets up an altar. He offers sacrifices. The plague stops, and that's the first time that the Temple Mount was really inaugurated to be the Temple Mount. From there on in, David purchases that plot of land, and that's going to be the Temple Mount. And in Chronicles it says, "Vayaneu veish min hashamayim al mizbech ha'ola v'chtiv yom David zehu beit Hashem ha'elokim zeh mizbech le'ola li'Yisrael." That when King David offered the sacrifice, Hashem replied by sending a fire down from heaven, and David said, "This is going to be the house of Hashem. This is where we're going to have an altar for Israel." And it wasn't only through a sacrifice that the Temple Mount was chosen, it was also through a sacrifice that the Shechina, that Hashem's presence, appeared there. As it says in Divrei Hayamim in Chronicles, King Solomon concludes his prayer, a fire comes down and consumes all the sacrifices, and Hashem's honor suffuses the home, the temple. All the house of Israel witnessed as the fire came down, and Hashem's honor settles on the house. They all bowed. Everyone bowed and gave thanks to Hashem. And Nachmanides over here, without spelling it out, is attacking Maimonides behind the scenes. Meaning he's bringing all these proofs to contend with Maimonides' interpretation for the sacrifices. Where Maimonides in the Guide to the Perplexed discusses how we have a pagan leaning, and the Torah comes and says, I'll help you get out of that pagan leaning. That we have a fault within ourselves, that we need to bring sacrifices, and that's why the Torah gives us the commandment of sacrifices. That's the direction Maimonides takes in the Guide to the Perplexed, and more in Nebuchim. And what Nachmanides really is doing over here, and he's not spelling it out, but what he's saying is, anyone that sees the verses sees it's not about us. Sacrifices is not like Maimonides says. It's not about placating our weaknesses. So we have these pagan tendencies, so we need to bring sacrifices. No way! You see throughout the verses that the sacrifices have an effect in heaven. The dedication of the temple, the dedication of the Mishkan, from Abel, from Cain and Hevel, from first man. That's why he brought his proof all the way from back there. Adam brought a sacrifice. He had pagan leanings. Adam knew God created him. So that's why Nachmanides is really behind the scenes, that what he set up over here is his case against Maimonides, where he's saying you can't say that it's just about our weaknesses. There is something positive about a sacrifice. There's something here where Hashem is revealing a secret that a sacrifice can have a positive impact on the world. That's the direction he's headed now. And he says, whoever has eyes and is willing to admit to the truth will see in the verses that the concept of sacrifices is something special. Ki kol refuah she'enata yodea ma'ota birot ha'to'elet haba mimena tukar kocha u'ma'alata. Because anytime you look at a medication and you don't understand its essence, but you see how it benefits people, then you start understanding its potency and its value. You see the potency and value of the korbanos, you see what they affected. So don't tell me it's out of weakness. That's the end of the thought, which the Ramban is not spelling out. Meaning behind the scenes, he wrote all this, I think it's pretty obvious, to counter Maimonides. V'avlatid lavo ketuv, and it says in the future time, the world's going to be fixed, you'd think there'd be no sacrifices. Look at what it says in the prophet Ezekiel. God says, when I smell the beautiful smell of your sacrifices, that's when I will come show my favor to you. You see, it says in the end of all prophets in Malachi that our sacrifices will find favor in the eyes of Hashem. Ultimately in the third temple. You see the sacrifices at the end of Ezekiel, They're all talking about the future. Now Nachmanides here is protecting himself, because Maimonides doesn't have to agree with that point. Maimonides, in his halachic work, says that the building of the temple is what revealed to us that Ezekiel was talking about a future temple. Meaning, originally the people heard Ezekiel's prophecies and they thought Yechezkel was talking about the next temple, the second temple. Remember, Yechezkel lived during the first temple. So he's describing a future temple. The people all thought he's talking about the next temple. Along came the prophets in the period of the beginning of the second temple and built the temple totally differently, a totally different temple than Ezekiel described based on prophecy. That's when the people realized Yechezkel wasn't talking about the second temple. He was talking about a future third temple that's yet to come. So then, is Maimonides bound to Nachmanides' understanding that the sacrifices are yet to come in the third temple? Not necessarily, because Maimonides learns that everything else about what Yechezkel said could have been interpreted about the second temple. So that's why Nachmanides takes these three proofs and tries to say, no, it's talking about the third temple. So now, the next step in Nachmanides' setup is to quote the rabbi who was his predecessor. Even in Nachmanides' commentary on Torah, he will often first quote his predecessor. The great predecessor was Rabbi Avram ibn Ezra, and only after he fully explains him, he goes out and argues with him. So that's the next step, to show what the Ibn Ezra held. Yeah? Good question. So I can answer you, or I could leave it hanging. I'm not sure which is more honest. So the simple answer is that prophecy will only return with the Mashiach, etc. So unless you have a prophet that's going to set it up differently, so then we have to say it's the third temple. We also have sources that seem to indicate that the temple will only be built three times, that there won't be a fourth. Those are two simple answers. But if you find fault in that, then we might have to go with more complex answers. But on the simple level, that's the way to go. V'inei dat Rabbi Avraham ben Ezra b'korbanot shem kofer nefesh. The Ibn Ezra learns that the idea behind sacrifices is that they're, so to speak, their redemption for a person's own soul. I should be there. I should be the one sacrificed over here for what I've done wrong. The animals instead of me. U'biyur ha'inyan l'dato ki ha'korbanot b'torah lo evo ela l'shagagot. And that's why the Ibn Ezra says, you look throughout the Torah, sacrifices are only brought for a sin that's done by mistake. If a person sinned on purpose, he purposely desecrated Shabbos, he purposely ate non-kosher, he may not bring a sacrifice. A sacrifice only enters the picture when a person did a mistake. Now, when someone did a mistake, so then he never gets the punishment of karet. A person will never get cut off from the world to come because he made a mistake. You don't find that in the Torah. You don't find that a person is going to go to perdition over a mistake. Rakaguf ra'ui le'anesh, says the Ibn Ezra, fantastic chidush. Our physical body gets punished over our mistakes, but not in the world to come, not our soul. Mipnei shelo haya nizhar b'mitzvat boro, because technically a person should have been more careful. It's not that it was beyond his control, that's ones. If it's beyond his control, so then he's completely absolved from responsibility. Here we're talking about a mistake, so had he been more careful, he would not have made the mistake. So then there's some punishment, but not in the world to come. And if a person would have really had respect for what God said, he wouldn't have come to that mistake. So that's why there's a minuscule punishment and the capacity to bring a sacrifice, which is a form of redemption of himself. So what's a person's responsibility? He says, you made a mistake. Why'd you make a mistake? Because you didn't care enough. If you would have cared, you wouldn't have made a mistake. You guys probably heard that from your parents, right? I didn't mean it. Right, you weren't focused. You didn't care. That's why you did. That's why you spilled. That's why I did A or B or C. So the same is true with the Torah. When is it that the Torah holds us accountable to a sacrifice? When a person made a mistake, because the mistake shows that he didn't care enough. So comes the Torah and says, confess over the sacrifice, pray that Hashem should forgive you, and you won't die. Bring a sacrifice as an atonement. ומפני שהמעשים צריכים לשלמות בפועל, כמו שייך את במחשבה שלא נזהר ובמעשה שאכלת חלב. And being that if we want to regain wholeness, so we have to fix what we did wrong. And there are two aspects to what a person did wrong when he made a mistake. One, his focus. He wasn't careful enough. Two, his action. He actually ate something that was prohibited. כן צריך שיביא גוף מעל חיים ויסמוך ידיו עליו בכוח כדי להשלים הכוונה. So, David Ezra says, so what do? We bring an animal and we lean on it with all our strength. We put all our weight on it. And then a person starts thinking and focusing, hey, wait a second. This is an atonement for me. Then he confesses, שכל הקורבנות צריכים וידוי. All sacrifices require a confession over them. We don't talk to the priest in the confession, right? We talk to God. We say, okay, this is what I did wrong, and I'm sorry, and I'm not going to do it again. I regret that I did it. וישחוט אותו לפני אלוקיו, and then the animal is slaughtered before Hashem. כלומר, ראוי אני שישפך דמי על חטי כזה. What a person is really saying is, really I deserve to have my life spilled over this sin. ויפטיר חלבים שהם חדרי המחשבה והכליות ששם כוח תאוותו. And the specific parts of the animal that are offered are the parts that reflect thinking and the parts that reflect desire. לומר שראויים כלי מחשבתו להישרף על חטאו. That's the idea that really all of that should have been burnt over his sin. ויהיה זה כופר לו בחמלת אלוקיו עליו ובחסדו. And that's a sacrifice, that's an atonement for him because of Hashem's mercy over him. So that's how the Ibn Ezra explains. וזה לשון רבי אברהם. And that's how, this is what the Ibn Ezra writes. ותת חלק בעיתו ימלא את החלק, על כן פירוש לכפר תחת כופר. So the Ibn Ezra says, the word kapara, atonement, comes from the word kofer, redemption. You're redeeming yourself through the animal. והעד מתחילת כתיסה, על כן כתוב פן יפגענו בדבר. You see, in the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, Hashem says, bring an atonement, lest you personally be punished. גם יתבונן מכל קורבן סוד התולדת והחטאות והמנות לאחיות מורי התורה. And there's further secrets within the idea of a sacrifice, that a person should think about how the world, one brings another, and how sin brings that to a pause, because a person did a sin, and now that animal doesn't have continuum. And then Hashem says, take a portion and give life, meaning you take a part of the animal and you give it to the Kohanim. That's to give continuum. That's the idea that if you do what's right, so then there is continuum in the world. So this is all the Ibn Ezra. And you guys should have a bunch of questions on this, because the Ibn Ezra on the surface doesn't add up. It's a very nice idea, but it only fits some sacrifices. That fits the sacrifices that are an atonement. What about all the other sacrifices? Oh, the Korban Tamid. So the Korban Tamid you could answer, because the Gemara says that's a chata sacrifice for all of Am Yisrael. The Tamid. What?
Which one was this?
This was the Ibn Ezra. The Ramban quoted the Ibn Ezra. This is the Olah and Chatat. Those are brought over sin. But what about the Shlamim? That could be donated. Valdato Korban Tamid lechaparat Arabim. So he could answer and say the Tamid, like you asked. So that's an atonement for the masses. Then davot yot kofer al hachataim sheinam nodim. So there are certain when you can dedicate volunteer sacrifice. So he's going to say that brings atonement for the sins you didn't even know about. Ve'avat pi sheyesh miktzat korbanot al zadon einan bedavar shechayav karet. He says, you know what? What he said isn't so accurate, because there are sins which you do on purpose and you do bring a sacrifice for them. If a person swears falsely after he stole, if a person was a nazir, he took upon himself to separate himself from wine, and he wasn't supposed to come to me, and he did. If a person swore falsely in testimony, if a person was intimate with a shifcha harufa, with a servant that was half free. So you have four examples there, one, two, three, four examples of sacrifices that are brought over zadon, over sins that were done on purpose. So it's not 100%, but nonetheless, you could say those are sins that don't carry the weight of karet. He wouldn't have been cut off. Elav chayvei lavin she'en shama chatat nefesh. They are a lower level. They're just prohibitions. But we're out of time, and he's going to go into many questions on Ibn Ezra, and how does all this work with the goat of Yom Kippur? We're just in time. That's where we'll pick up next week. That's very nice. The sacrifice, the interpretation of Ibn Ezra. But what about the goat of Yom Kippur? What are we doing there? And what about the red heifer, the Parah Adumah? So we'll see that, Bezat Hashem, next week.